The following program is a sports handicapping show. That's right, we will be discussing sports betting and all kinds of other gambling stuff, including game predictions. As you know, not every bet will win, but we do our best. Feel free to use this information at your own risk, and remember, wager wisely, folks.
Broadcasting from the Vegas Video Network studios, live from the Las Vegas Strip, Covers.com presents Vegas Sports Day! And now from the sports betting capital of the world, here are your hosts, Teddy and the Professor.
It's Friday in Sin City, and you are watching the weekend preview edition of Vegas Sports Day, the pulse of the sports betting world. I'm your host, Teddy Covers, joined as always by my esteemed colleague, the dapper and well-dressed professor, Dave Malinsky.
Well, it's a special Grammy weekend edition. So coming up today, why John Calipari finds out that being near the Grand Ole Opry on a Saturday night is not a good place to be. The Timberwolves, when they see the Mavericks coming to town, start singing All You Need Is Love. And the Grammy winner for Best Jazz Performance, that just might be happening in Salt Lake City tonight.
Dave, let's start with the first take. Obviously a busy night on the hardwoods last night. What'd you see that you want to share with our viewing audience?
Yeah, something we started to anticipate a little bit on yesterday's show, played out even more dramatically than we thought. We talked about the fact that last night Sacramento was going to get that rare television game at home. It meant a lot not only to that team, but to the city. A city right now that needs to show some fan support, otherwise they may be heading up to Seattle pretty soon. But look at the intensity level they brought under those circumstances. But we also saw good basketball. It wasn't just intensity. 60 points in the paint against a team that plays some of the best interior defense of anyone in the NBA. I'm not sure we'll see anyone get to 60 again in the paint against Oklahoma City all year. Does that mean that we can start to look to the Kings a little bit? We mentioned yesterday that they've been better with a healthy Marcus Thornton. Or was that just a one-off with the special emotion of that night? In the past, we might have written it off as a one-off, but we saw more than just intensity. For one of the few times in years, we saw actually good basketball out of that team. Maybe they finally do have Paul Westphal out of their system. Grammy weekend. Are you going to sing something for us that could
Absolutely.
Win an award?
I didn't even know it was Grammy weekend. And the fact that you know that it's Grammy weekend on a Friday, it's not even like they're building up to the Grammys yet. It's Friday. They haven't even talked about it yet.
USA Today. It's delivered to my door. I'm sorry.
That's how they get you.
Yeah. That's how they get me.
When it comes to Grammys, is there a more useless award? Maybe the Tonys are more useless than the Grammys. Maybe the ESPYs are more useless than the Tonys and the Grammys. Maybe the Heisman's more useless than all three, but that's not where I'm going with the first take. We have to talk about what happened last night in that Iowa-Northwestern game. And, man, we took, Dave, you and I took a ton of heat about this play. In the forums, they were mad. We got emails. People are mad. Guess what? Some of these play of the days are probably going to lose. You know, we're not expecting it 100% or 90% or 80% or 70%. We can hit 6 out of 10. That's always the goal. If you hit 6 out of 10, you're going to make good money. If you can hit 55% long-term, you're going to make good money. Don't stress out about any single play. But the bottom line is the Iowa-Northwestern game last night, we got the handicap at least half right. Northwestern did not play shutdown defense on Iowa. That was a big part of the cap. We're saying the Wildcats defense isn't good. You can't be laying points in the Big Ten without a solid defense. What did Iowa do last night? They shot 51%, better than 51% overall. They shot 50% from three-point range. What didn't Iowa do last night? Well, they didn't play any defense either. But incredibly enough, two teams didn't play any defense. The game still didn't go over the opening total. And we saw money come in on the under, and some of that money cashed. Again, there are going to be games that you get half right. When you win those half right games, you're on a nice little run. When you lose those half right games, like we did last night, that run, not quite so nice. Bottom line, looking forward to a strong bounce back weekend with a couple of selections for you later when it comes to money time. But for right now, let's start by sorting through some of the emails. And again, we've gotten a ton of emails. I really appreciate the fact that you guys are making this your show. Let's start with this one from Eric. And Eric says, I watch almost every episode of your show, and as someone new to the game, I find it to be an excellent tool for learning how to think about sports betting. Why, thank you, Eric. I appreciate that. Until recently, a fairly respected site had Obama at minus 2,300 to get the nomination for the Democratic Party in September. You're laying a lot for a long time, but I think we can agree that the chances of Obama not ending up the nominee of the Democratic Party are well below 1%. So these are sure to be bets with positive expectation. How should they be handled, both theoretically and practically? Great question, Eric. What do you say, Dave?
Also, some nice little elements in that letter that we don't quite want to read about how Obama could lose the nomination. References the feline sashimi and, you know, stuff like that. We appreciate the humor, Eric. Hey, there are some good points brought up here. A lot of this is almost as much of a lifestyle issue as a gambling issue. What you're doing with a bet like this is you're actually booking the lottery. And as anyone knows, when you follow those percentages, booking the lottery can be awfully profitable. But here's the deal. You make a little. Short term, you can lose a lot. So it depends on whether you're in position to be able to make the bet. If you've got the bankroll, that's a very good bet to make. A good friend of mine is an investment banker, and he deals in things different than we do, even in a sports betting standpoint. I will see him step out and make big wagers on big money line favorites that, again, we're not accustomed to, but the banker used to tying up a lot of money for a small amount of profit in a short cycle, and he does that. Let's address something else that Eric brought into play on that front. If you see a substantial edge on a prop like that, do you parlay it? Now, some books might not let you. In this case, they probably would because of that type of odds. So let's say you got three basketball games you like tonight. Would you parlay to those three? Eric pointing out that if you did that, you'd get $109.13 in September as opposed to $100 by betting those same games right now. That 9% could be substantial. And if you can afford to have the money locked up for that period of time. So yes, there is some merit to it. Wouldn't we all like to be in position to be booking the lottery?
And we talked earlier in the week about the NFL futures for the coming season. And two comments that bear relevance to this. One is that we talked about those future bets in a no-hedging world, where we were saying, look, this is a bet that, you know, the bets that you want to make now are bets that you can get great odds, and you don't want to be making hedge bets unless they're positive expectation wagers. But when we talked about the San Francisco 49ers in particular, they were 20-1 to win the Super Bowl. They're in a very, very winnable division in the NFC West. You can make future bets like a bet on Obama or like a bet on the San Francisco 49ers at plus 2,000. With the intention, with the express intention of finding ways to hedge it when the time is right. So if you're making a bet on the future board and your thought process, no, I'm not looking for this 20-1 score. I'm looking to be able to lock in a 2-1 profit or a 3-1 profit or a minus 150 profit, just some kind of profit with this particular wager. Well, you have those type of realistic opportunities. Both in the future board and when we talk about on the political board, those opportunities are out there.
Yeah, so we should be clear on that because we've said time and time again on this show there's no such thing as a hedge if you have a good ticket in your pocket. That holds true, but it's a different bet when you look to set up a hedge. And what Teddy's talking about with the 49ers makes a lot of sense. If you look at the NFC next year, the East is going to be tough to get through pretty clean. Those teams can play. The Saints, yeah, they're favored to win their division, but Atlanta and Carolina offer them challenges. The Packers, they get challenges from Detroit and from the Bears in their division. So the 49ers have an ideal cycle because their division is so weak to be one of the two teams that has that NFC home field advantage. So why do we take that 20-1? Not to win the Super Bowl, but to get that home field advantage, because if the NFL gets down to the final eight teams and you're sitting on a 20-1 ticket, you've preset a hedging opportunity. So when we bet the 49ers, it's not necessarily to take it all the way home. It's to get to that period in which you do have the hedge as an option. Very good question, though, by Eric. If you've got the bankroll to make that kind of play, absolutely nothing wrong with it. Most people that we talk to on a daily basis can't quite afford to have the money taken out of play that long.
Great question, Eric. And again, we've been getting great questions on a daily basis. Please keep those emails coming. We answer as many questions as we can on air on a daily basis. That email address, sportsday@covers.com. Of course, you can ask us questions via Twitter. Follow the Twitter account, @VegasSportsDay. And you can ask us questions in the posting forum. Active threads and discussions going right now, covers.com/posting forum.
Got a busy basketball weekend ahead. So coming up next, the news you need to know in our Insider Six-Pack. You're watching Vegas Sports Day.
Are you looking for the latest odds, the fastest scores, the most important trends, and the best matchups and stats? Are you looking for the key late-breaking information that can make you a winner? Well, Covers.com has the answer. The world's largest sports betting community gives you a front-row seat in the heart of the action, from the opening lines to the final scores. If you want to stay ahead of the game, Covers covers the numbers.
I'm Courtney Leone. This is Vegas Video Network. You want me to mention awkward silence? Let's do that then, okay. Never been on set here before. I'm always out live on location for Awkward Silence 2.1. I'm Courtney Leone, and you're watching the Vegas Video Network. Good, better.
Yeah, let's pop the top on the first weekend six-pack of the coming weekend. Oh, no, that didn't make sense. The Insider Six-Pack of the coming weekend. You know what I'm talking about. Crack a beer. Enjoy the show.
There goes our shot at a Grammy.
Yeah, so easy coming. Our shot at a Grammy went the first time that I sang on air, and that was the end of it. Let's start with Orlando and tonight. If you didn't break down the Heat Magic box score from Wednesday night, you probably should have. Orlando, a dynamic 13-point win on the scoreboard, but the way that the Magic got that win brings plenty of food for thought. How about 42 three-point shots for Orlando in that ballgame versus 42 shots from inside the arc? 84 shots, half of them came from long range. They made 17 of those triples for an effective field goal rate of 54.7%. If we convert that to two-point shots. And by scrambling the Miami defense, they were also able to get 17 offensive rebounds, which were turned into 23 second chance points. They spread the court so well that seven different players had multiple three-point attempts. And the main beneficiary may well have been Dwight Howard. 25 points, 24 boards, 4 assists, a monster night for the East's best big man. Now we're going to get a good measuring stick of that new look for Orlando tonight. This is going to be the first meeting for the Magic against the team that knocked them out of the postseason last year, the Atlanta Hawks, a series in which Orlando, as a team, held to just 26% three-point shooting. You can remember that series from last spring. It was just a brick fest for those Magic shooters night after night after night going up against Atlanta. That's how the Hawks were able to beat them. Now, not quite the same matchups this time around for Atlanta, with Al Horford and Jason Collins sidelined. They're extremely thin in the low post right now. So much so that Zaza Pachulia played more than 38 minutes in their win over the Pacers on Wednesday. They did sign Eric Dampier to give them another body if they want to do a hack a Howard in the closing minutes of this one. Dampier could see the court as early as tonight, but I wouldn't expect him to initially have any type of significant impact.
A little bit of good news and a whole lot of bad news for the Clippers at Cleveland on Wednesday. Good news, they got Kenyon Martin on the court a lot earlier than they originally thought. Martin gives them 20 minutes and 12 seconds, 6 points, 4 rebounds, a couple of block shots. He's going to be a kid cog up front for them. He could really matter at playoff time. Bad news, some discord, let's say, in Clipperland. Started earlier that day when Mo Williams was fretting about not having his contract renewed yet, something you don't talk about in the middle of the season when you're trying to make the playoffs. And then the defense just collapsed in an ugly 99-92 loss to Cleveland. They allowed the Cavaliers to shoot over 51%. Ramon Sessions, 24 points and 13 assists, replacing Kyrie Irving. It was so bad that Vinny Del Negro kind of went off a little bit after that game. Here's the best part of what he had to say. We need all of our players to play hard on the defensive end, have a defensive mindset instead of worrying about how many touches they get and all that stuff that losing teams talk about. Chauncey Billups has only been gone for a couple of days, and you could already see that leadership void taking place.
It was certainly a surprising win for the Cavs on Wednesday. Because not only were they playing without the starting point guard, rookie sensation Kyrie Irving, probably the early favorite in NBA Rookie of the Year voting, but also missing Tristan Thompson and Anthony Parker for that ballgame. Irving not expected back tonight against Milwaukee. The Cavs bringing him along very carefully post-concussion. But Ramon Sessions and a now healthy Booby Gibson showed on Wednesday that they could start and play well alongside one another, even though in theory they both kind of play the same position, and they're able to do it with some legitimate chemistry on the floor. Now, Irving's getting some due credit for Cleveland's decent start. I want to give a little attention here to one of my favorite blue-collar guys in the NBA. That's Anderson Barajau. He didn't make the All-Star roster yesterday, but he is certainly having a terrific season. You know, in the LeBron James era, Barajau was considered, you know, he's always a scrappy role player guy. He can only come off the bench. Well, that hasn't been the case this year, averaging a double-double, 11 points per game on better than 50% shooting, 11.8 rebounds per game, leading the NBA in offensive boards. Not enough for an All-Star ticket for Barajau this year, but his leadership and intensity have certainly been huge for this very young Cavaliers team.
Got some issues on both sides of the equation. When Dallas goes to Minnesota tonight, Kevin Love returns for Minnesota after that two-game suspension. Not the best of timing, of course, for the Mavericks. First two head-to-head games this year, Love, 56 points, 28 rebounds. Minnesota wins the two games by 32. They win by 17 on this court. They win by 15 at Dallas. Out-rebounded the Mavs by 22 in those two games. Dallas just doesn't have an ideal counter against Kevin Love up front. Also gets easier for Love because Michael Beasley back in the rotation now for the Timberwolves. Type of weapons that Dallas front court has struggled to deal with. Where Dallas should be a little bit healthier tonight is in the backcourt. Jason Terry, season-low minutes and points at Denver, had to leave early on Wednesday. He's expected to play tonight. We're expecting Jason Kidd to play, but we can't get a confirmation yet. This was the target date all along. They've only played one game this week. That this was the last go-around for him, get a little bit of practice time. They will not commit to having him in the lineup, but because it's double revenge, and because after this game, four straight games against winning opponents, don't be surprised to see Kidd back tonight. He's missed the last six games. All they've done is tread water without him. 3-3 straight up, 2-4 against the spread.
San Antonio does not play tonight, but you may want to file this one away for tomorrow when the Spurs travel to New Jersey. They are expected to have Manu Ginobili back on the floor. Now, we talked about the Spurs' annual rodeo road trip in a postmortem segment earlier this week, and note how well this is actually laying out for them right now, especially in terms of getting Ginobili back into the rotation. They're going to be headquartered in New York all weekend, four nights. They're going to practice in a community college in Manhattan, and again, after they face the Nets, the first full-scale practices this team has had since the season started back on Christmas Day. Meanwhile, the injury news just gets worse and worse for the Nets. They're already without Brook Lopez. They're without Damian James. They're without Mehmet Okur. They're without Marshawn Brooks. They're without Deshaun Stevenson. I know, now the guys that they signed on short-term contracts to replace the injured players, now they're getting hurt. Keith Bogans, you know, he lasted all of five games in New Jersey after getting signed to a short-term deal. Well, he's out for the remainder of the season, fractured his left ankle. This is a Nets team very, very short in the depth department these days.
Surprising news coming out of Colorado Springs this week. You would think that the Air Force Academy would be among the most unlikely places to fire a coach in the middle of the season, especially with an $800,000 buyout involved. You wouldn't think that would happen at a program like that. Makes us wonder what's really been happening behind the scenes. Wasn't that Jeff Reynolds had done that bad of a job? 63-81 isn't that bad at the Academy. They were 11-10 this year. 2 weeks ago, actually took UNLV to overtime. But then the bottom fell out. An 81-42 home loss to New Mexico was the worst loss in the history of the program, followed up by an 18-point loss against Colorado State, which they didn't show a whole lot of effort. So you could see some seeds were being planted. Led to a meeting with Hans Mew, the athletic director, and a couple of the players. It's the results of that meeting that led to the Reynolds firing. Let's talk from the players first. Taylor Stewart said, "We lost the fun and the joy, and I don't think any of us ever experienced that." Another player, Mike Fitzgerald, "We spoke freely about where the program was at. It was ultimately his decision," referring to Mew, the athletic director. "I think we thought there needed to be a change. but it was up to him. Finally from the AD, for the first time in months, I saw them smile. Obviously, they agreed with my decision. Obviously, they were frustrated. We're not likely to get more out of the academy than that. It's going to be pretty close-lipped. What happens tomorrow night when they host Boise State? Maybe a better attitude. These players might be glad that Reynolds is gone. Interim coach is going to be Dave Pilipich. Not sure if he's going to be in line for the full-time job or not, but he did issue a little bit of a statement as to what we might expect tomorrow. He's not real thrilled about the transition, it appears. Everyone's head is spinning a bit right now, so we might try to be a little more simplistic just to help everyone out and get through the next game or so. But big changes at Air Force.
And this is the question I got to ask you, Dave. $800,000? Does that come out of our tax money?
They said it was 23 to 1 Obama would get the nomination.
Huh?
Hope you didn't bet that yet. Maybe they're going to adjust that odds down a little bit.
Up next, we're going to head to the Friday night NBA hardwoods. We got an NBA on ESPN doubleheader to break down next.
No pressure. Hi, I'm Dennis Silvers from, can't think of the name on my damn show, Golf and Other Four-Letter Words, and you're watching the Vegas Video Network, I think.
Livestream is your premier place to watch live events on the web, mobile devices, and connected TVs. See new events daily or broadcast your own at livestream.com. Livestream. Be there.
Okay, guys. It's money time. This edition of Money Time is brought to you by Covers.com. Remember, for all the key information you need in every sport, Covers covers the numbers. Let's go to Madison Square Garden in New York City tonight, where the LA Lakers, 3.5-point road favorites against the suddenly resurgent New York Knicks. You know, Lakers, well, that's just a great line. A game for the aged. Last night, that's coming from Elliot Tiefert in the LA Daily News. And yeah, that was not, it was compelling basketball. It was interesting basketball. It was not particularly good basketball. And it certainly wasn't fast-paced basketball as the Celtics and Lakers went to overtime last night. But in a game for the aged, well, the aged Lakers came out 1 point ahead. And they won the game despite shooting just 1 of 15 from three-point range. That's the lowest shooting percentage from three-point range in any road victory for the L.A. Lakers since 1999. So it's been a while since they were able to win one on the highway without draining at least a couple of threes. We did see major minutes from these Lakers last night. Kobe Bryant plays more than 43 minutes. Pau Gasol more than 40. Andrew Bynum more than 40. And now they're going to run into younger and fresher legs as Linsanity. We had Michael Didier, who's a regular viewer and a regular emailer, said, we got to give Jeremy Lin some love. It's Linsanity in New York right now. What do we got, Dave? Break down Jeremy Lin for us.
It's actually Linsanity here in the studio. Before the Money Time opening, he's fixing his hair on the commercial break. Seriously, that actually happened. It would be on camera, and this is what we have to deal with in here on a daily basis. What do the Lakers have to deal with? Gosh, Jeremy Lin has been terrific. Where did it come from? Nobody knows. Because certainly the Warriors didn't expect that he was going to be able to play to this level. They let him go. Certainly Mike D'Antonio didn't expect this, or he'd have been playing a long time ago. Hello, you were playing Henry Bibby at the point, okay? Let's look at how terrific, though, he's been. In these first three games, the Lin numbers, very, very dramatic. 25.3 points per game, 8.3 assists per game, 3.7 rebounds per game. That's Magic Johnson numbers at point guard. His plus-minus has been a plus 43 over 116 minutes and 28 seconds. If we prorate that, that's 17.7 per game of advantage that the Knicks were having with Lin on the court. And it wasn't like he was walking over some patsies. That includes Deron Williams, Devin Harris, and John Wall, some pretty good point guards that he was up against head-to-head. But there is a difference. Beyond the point guard position at those other teams, especially for Williams and for Wall, there wasn't a whole lot. So you could break down some pretty crumbly defenses. Now it changes tonight. They've been running well with Jeremy Lin, but how well can he run the show if it becomes a slog, especially without Carmelo Anthony and Amari Stoudemire to get the ball to?
All right. Now, the reason I'm fixing my hair, Dave, is I'm desperate for a haircut. I got an appointment after the show, and I got to keep it, you know, I got to do something to get through this last show before the haircut comes. But at least I'm not calling Mike Bibby Henry Bibby, and at least I'm not comparing Jeremy Lin to Magic Johnson. All right, three games, he's not Magic Johnson. He's not going to ever become Magic Johnson. I mean, not likely anyway.
But the stats were Magic Johnson stats.
They were Magic Johnson-esque over a three-game span. I will not disagree with you there. Lakers down to number 25 in pace right now. Kobe Bryant's quote, "We couldn't beat a turtle in a race," you know? Again, we saw that game against the Celtics last night. I got over the closing total by a hook in overtime. The Lakers are going to slow it down. This is not a team that's prepared to run and gun right now. Lakers also number two in rebounding, the Knicks number 20. Those are two areas where New York could have some troubles, playing at a slow pace and doing a decent job on the boards. But it's surely worth noting, this LA Lakers team, second night of back-to-back on the roads. We've seen some pretty ugly losses consistently throughout the course of the season. They lose at Utah. They lose at Orlando. They lose against the Clippers, which is at home on the road. They lose at Denver. They lose at Sacramento. Let's not forget, not only they have to win this game, they got to win this game by margin in order to cover this number.
Likely to see a different tempo in the ESPN nightcap, Oklahoma City taking on the Jazz in Salt Lake City. Right now, the Road Thunder, a one-point favorite. But, boy, what a tough setting for them. We'll go back to our old friend Mort Olson, founder of the Gold Cheat, who is probably the first to put out the phrase scheduling dynamics as a way of approaching games. And, boy, this is a tough setting for the Thunder. It's four road games in five nights, six games overall in eight nights, 10 consecutive games at court changes. That's a lot of fatigue potential on one side of the equation. Now look at the other side. Utah, back-to-back days off at home, and off again tomorrow. You've got one team that can let it all hang out. Meanwhile, for Oklahoma City, not only is it a tough setting, but the first three legs of this Western swing, those were long, long legs.
Oh, no question. I mean, it's not just been road games for OKC. They've been hard road games. Since Monday, this week, you know, all three West Coast games in doubt to the final minute. They had to play five extra minutes in Portland the other night thanks to that, we weren't going to bring it up again, some kind of a goaltending call in the final seconds or something. The bottom line is that look at the numbers here for Oklahoma City. Kevin Durant, since Monday, 44 minutes, more than 43 minutes, and more than 41 minutes over that three-game span. Russell Westbrook, 42, 43, and 38. The two key players for OKC, obviously, we can expect them to be a little bit gassed this evening. And boy, that really creates issues with the Thunder's depth. I mean, we saw it again last night. Six-man rotation, who can actually score for Scott Brooks this year. You look at the bench other than James Harden last night for Oklahoma City, 2 points, five boards, four assists. They're just not getting that type of production from their bench players, from their role players, that's going to allow them to have any sort of the ability to run and gun if the Jazz look to push the pace this evening. The other big concern for Oklahoma City, of course, is in the turnover department. Well, we called them number 29 the other day. Well, they're dropped to number 30 now in turnovers. Number 29 in turnover ratio. The Lakers are the only team that's worse. Number 29 in assist-to-turnover ratio. Only the Kings are worse. Last night, 23 turnovers leading to 28 Sacramento points on the other end. This could be a problem because, Dave, Utah is not a team with turnover issues.
Yeah. The Jazz take care of the ball. Number three in the NBA in turnover. So when you look at those numbers, number three versus number 30, you begin to envision extra possessions. And that's how Sacramento got the job done. As Teddy had talked about, those points in transition off of turnovers, that was a big part of the 60 points in the paint that they got. Utah attacks the paint very, very well. Now here's the key. You talk about those Oklahoma City fatigue issues. Utah has 11 players averaging double-figure minutes per game. And now they go out and add Damari Carroll, who was already with the team yesterday, likely to get some action out of him. They may be able to go 12 deep tonight. So given that they've had back-to-back days, not only to get fresh, but to prepare. That means a chance for Tyrone Corbin to put a game plan together, keeping in mind that if you're playing 6 games in 8 days, you have no game plan if you're Oklahoma City. You're just rolling the basketball out there and hoping to play your game. So we can have some fun with this one. This is worthy of a graphic, Jacob. It's play of the daytime with the Jazz. We're going to take that plus one that's being offered. Look for Utah with the energy level they'll be able to bring to wear Oklahoma City down, keeping in mind that Westbrook, the biggest key here, they really are missing Eric Maynor. And those added minutes, they don't have a good backup point guard. A wear-down game for the Jazz, who should take control in the fourth quarter, outlast the Thunder, plus one, that's worthy of a play of the day.
When we come back, we're going to shift our focus to the weekend college hoops card as Money Time continues.
Traditional media believes that after about 3 minutes, you'll tune out. Most Vegas media companies think if it doesn't jiggle, you won't tune in. At the Vegas Video Network, we think both are wrong. The Vegas Video Network is the first and only live online broadcast network that specializes in insider news and expert views about Vegas. We combine great storytelling with the ability to watch when and where you want, on your computer, mobile device, or television. Discover the real Las Vegas. Visit VegasVideoNetwork.com.
Let's go to Saturday afternoon in Durham, North Carolina, where look-ahead line has the Duke Blue Devils about a 17.5-point home favorite against the suddenly resurgent Maryland Terrapins. And before we break down this game, we need to take a little bit of a look back and see exactly how Duke escaped with the 1-point win in North Carolina the other night. Well, Duke down by 10, 82-72, with 2 minutes and 10 seconds remaining. If you were looking at the live betting opportunities at that stage of the ballgame, you could have had Duke at better than 20-1, and it was a sucker bet at the time. But obviously, that sucker bet cashed. What happened? Well, you know, we saw a lot of little fluky things. You know, we saw Ryan Kelly's miss at 220. Sure looked like an air ball on the replay, but got ruled as a shot that was blocked. Duke gets the ball back instead of North Carolina getting the ball back, up 10 with 2 minutes left. Seth Curry, how many steps did he take before that three-pointer? Three? Four? Five? An obvious travel. The refs missed it. Curry hits the three. Bang. A 148. All of a sudden, the lead is cut. Other fluky plays. What about Tyler Zeller's tip-in on the wrong end of the court? You know, if Zeller comes down with the rebound off of that Ryan Kelly miss, bang. North Carolina up three. With the ball about to get fouled, 18 seconds left, still a legitimate chance to cover that ball game. So a huge power rating shift. Think about it. If North Carolina wins that game by 10, power ratings still say the Tar Heels a lot better than the Blue Devils. But now we talk about these final score slash statistic derivatives in the various what am I looking for here? Bottom line, huge power rating shift. Based on the fact that Duke was able to win the game, a power rating shift that may not be fully merited.
Definitely time for a haircut. Now, when we broke down the Duke-North Carolina game on Wednesday, talked about the fact that this is not your prototypical Duke team on the defensive end of the court. They won in that wild scramble at the end by knocking down some big shots. But boy, as we look at them as a big favorite, a role they have not been successful in a couple of their ACC home games, lost outright twice already to Florida State, Miami of Florida, got pushed to the end by Virginia. You wonder, can Duke get any easy wins? Let's take a look at their defensive numbers in ACC play this year. You're going to see Duke at places we're not accustomed to seeing. Now, these are just conference games, but they're number 10 in points allowed, number 10 in field goal percentage allowed, number 11 in percentage of defensive rebounds that they're getting. They're only 8th in the conference in block shots, 8th in the conference in steals. This is the one time that Duke is near the bottom of the league across the board in all of the key categories. Now something else comes into play, you know, on Saturday. It's that energy level. You play defense when you have good energy. Is the energy going to be there? Not only the letdown off of North Carolina, which we know most of you will recognize and we'll talk about, but remember they played a day later last week and they played Miami on Super Bowl Sunday afternoon. That game went to overtime. There's back-to-back games where they've had to really get out and extend their legs. if they were playing bad defense with fresh legs, it could be real problematic come tomorrow.
And let's remember what happened in the first meeting between these two teams. You know, Maryland, they led that game 45-42 at home, 15-17 remaining in the second half. So into the second half with a lead over Duke. Well, the end game didn't work out very well for them. They ended up losing 74-61. But what's the key swing category in that ballgame? Free throws. Duke, 17 of 18 from the charity stripe, and that's well above their normal percentage. Maryland, just 11 of 21 from the free throw line, and that's well below their season-long percentage. Since that time, Terps 4-0 against the spread. They won outright as road dogs at Clemson, took Miami of Florida to overtime on the road. This team's hanging around, and they're covering some points, Brad. It's playing much better basketball now than they were earlier in the campaign.
Big-time atmosphere Saturday night in Nashville, Tennessee. Kentucky projecting about a 5.5-point favorite over host Vanderbilt. Going to tie into some things we talked about on the show earlier in the week. We had a good letter from someone saying, you know, talking about letdown and look-ahead situations and why college basketball is so different. Kentucky's been a team that's been immune to those very issues because they change the whole roster just about every year. So they never get too high for a given game, never get too low. But it also means something a little bit different in settings like this. Memorial Gym in Nashville, one of the toughest places to play. So what does John Calipari have to come into this tough venue? Not a whole lot of experience at all.
Yeah, I mean, we talk about the unique venue of Memorial Gym. Very tough sight lines in that venue. And the benches are behind the baskets, not on the side of the court. So even sitting on the sidelines watching the game, it's an awkward fit for players who haven't been there before. So when you look at an experienced team, a veteran team, they played in this venue before, maybe they can handle it. It doesn't look like a bad spot. When we look at Kentucky and the experience that they have on this floor, well, not a whole lot. Career minutes at Vanderbilt, Terrence Jones, he played one game there. Darren Lamb, yeah, he played one game there. That's it for the Wildcats. And again, when you're talking about 1-4 straight up in the last five trips, the only win during that span coming by a grand total of 2 points, this look-ahead point spread looks a little bit odd from that venue. Let's not forget, ESPN Game Day coming to Nashville at Vandy for the first time ever. It's going to be an electric venue on Saturday night, Dave.
So while Kentucky has all that inexperience, you know, of all the players who will appear in this game, only two have ever been on this court before. Look at what Vanderbilt brings. Four senior starters and a junior starter. That's a big, big edge in terms of handling the kind of pressure that's going to be there. And also look at the matchups. You know, we've talked a few times on the show about how dynamic that Kentucky defense has been. Best shot-blocking team around the basket we've seen in quite some time. Well, that's okay. Vandy doesn't score around the basket. Vandy can score on the perimeter. At number 8 in the country in 3-point shots made, number 19 in 3-point field goal percentage. John Jenkins, number 1 in the nation in number of 3-pointers made per game. Will Kentucky, on the first look, not only at this gym, but at these Vanderbilt perimeter shooters, will that defense have the discipline to stay out on the shooters? A team that's accustomed to going for the blocks and making this spectacular play. Could there possibly be some openings here? We bring this up because this is one of these intriguing games where instead of the 5.5, this might be a real money line opportunity. That if Kentucky is as dominant as they've been, the points may not matter. But if Vandy's there late, and it's close late, they actually got a heck of a chance to win the game outright in that final minute against a team that may struggle in this atmosphere. So yeah, if we get +6 or more, a little Vandy. If we get the corresponding money line, maybe a little more Vandy. But we'll have something a whole lot more in our pockets before that one ever tips off.
Yeah, absolutely. We're going to take a look at the Maryland Terrapins plus the points. Again, the look-ahead line has Maryland +17.5. That's too many. A plain and simple Vegas Sports Day weekend look-ahead play of the day. Let's take Maryland plus the points at Duke on Saturday. I think that's going to be a rock-solid selection. And that's going to wrap it up for the weekend preview edition. Dave, do you have something to say there? You had a little smarmy look on your face. You want to make one more snipe?
I'm just picturing you at the barber. Is it a barber or is it a hairstylist?
It's Sport Clips.
Neither.
For Mr. Merlinski, I'm Mr. Savransky. Enjoy the games and good luck. We'll see you again on Monday.